Hi, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of the History of English podcast. My name is Kevin Stroud, your host for this series of podcasts which will explore the history of the English language. In this introductory episode, I want to lay the groundwork for the series of podcasts which will follow. Let me begin by noting that this is ultimately a history podcast. The topic happens to be English, but it's not a podcast about the technical aspects of English. It's not my goal or intention to teach anyone proper grammar or pronunciation. Instead, this is really a podcast about the history of the language. And you can't separate the history of the language from the history of those who spoke the language. So this is really the story of the English language from its earliest ancestor, the Indo-European language spoken in Eastern Europe about 4,000 years ago, to its current status as the closest thing we have to a modern international language. And it's the story of the people, the places, and the events which shaped the language into what it's become today. It's also the story of the words which we use today and how those words came into our language. And speaking of the language we have today, it's a language which has emerged from an obscure Germanic dialect spoken in Northern Europe about 2,000 years ago to now one of the most commonly spoken languages in the world. Technically speaking, English ranks behind Chinese and Spanish in terms of the most commonly spoken native or first languages. But when second or other learned languages are taken into account, it actually rivals Chinese in terms of the total number of speakers, and it's undoubtedly the most commonly learned language in the world. Some linguists estimate that nearly 1 billion people speak English today. And of the total number of English speakers, it's estimated that there are approximately 3 times as many non-native speakers of English as native speakers. This fact reflects the desire of people around the world to learn English as the de facto international language. English is routinely used as a common medium of communication among speakers of other languages. When German businessmen established a Volkswagen plant in China, the Germans and their Chinese counterparts used English to communicate with each other, even though it's not the native language of either group. And a Russian airline pilot landing in Rome will communicate with the Italian air traffic controller in English, not Russian or Italian, because English is the official language for international aviation. And it's very easy to see that English has emerged and continues to emerge as the predominant international language. So the question is, why should we bother learning about the history of English? Well, I think first, it's an interesting story. It really is fascinating. But it also helps to explain many of the peculiar aspects of English. For example, why do we say, I could care less, when what we really mean to say is, I could not care less? And why do we have houses, but we don't have mouses, we have mice? Why do we have boxes and foxes, but not oxes? We have oxen. We can have a man, woman, and child, but we don't have mans, womans, and childs. We have men, women, and children. Why do we spell knife with a K or gnome with a G? And why is the F sometimes pronounced with a GH, like cough, and other times with a PH, like phone? I could go on and on because the examples seem almost endless, but the answers to those questions lie in the history of the language. Now, I've heard some people express that English must have an unusually large number of these peculiar aspects compared to other languages, but it's not necessarily true. There are lots of languages, and many of them are quite complicated and have lots of unusual or peculiar rules. But one thing that English does have that lots of other languages don't is a massive vocabulary. It's generally agreed that no other language has the number of words that English has. And that should tell you something. Unlike some languages which tend to reject outside influences, English has shown an incredible willingness and ability to adapt and evolve, to borrow elements from other languages, including words, and to adapt them into English. About 1,000 years ago, in the year 1066 to be precise, an army led by William of Normandy invaded England from northern France. And many of you will know this story very well because William of Normandy became known to history as William the Conqueror, the last foreign leader to invade and conquer England. The arrival of the Normans changed almost everything in England, socially, culturally, economically, legally, and especially linguistically. The defeated Anglo-Saxon earls were wiped out, and they were removed from power and were replaced by Norman French earls and knights who had fought with and supported William. And for the next three centuries, French became the official language of the English government. It became the language of the courts, the aristocracy, and the ruling class. In fact, it was not until the late 1300s, around the beginning of the so-called Wars of the Roses, that we have an English monarch who spoke English exclusively again. What we see happening here is a theme which will extend throughout the podcast. Language shift is not about numbers. It's about power. A relatively small number of powerful people speaking one language can make a much larger number of people learn their language. We see the same phenomenon in Western Europe when a relatively small number of Latin-speaking Romans imposed their language on the Celtic peoples who they invaded in Western Europe. Today, almost everyone in continental Europe west of Germany speaks a language which evolved from Latin, the so-called Romance languages. We also see it in the spread of English in the 20th and 21st centuries. The total number of people who speak English as their first language is relatively small compared to the world at large, yet people throughout the world seek to learn and communicate with each other in English. It's this tendency for language to spread because of power, sometimes military or political power, sometimes economic power, sometimes social or cultural power, but it's this tendency for language to spread because of certain power associated with the speakers of the language that caused a major upheaval in the English language when the Norman French invaded in 1066. Afterwards, French was imposed by the Normans as the official language of England. And during this period, English came very close to disappearing as a distinct language. It would not be much of an exaggeration to say that it almost became an anglicized dialect of French. It absorbed a massive number of French words, but it did not become French. It remained English, albeit a highly modified version of English. And it became a much larger language with an enhanced vocabulary. The language was changed so much as a result of this experience that linguists mark this period as the transition from Old English or Anglo-Saxon to the period known as Middle English. And this is but one example of how English survived by assimilating outside influences rather than rejecting change and subsequently dying out. The Norman invasion was just one event which changed the English language, but all languages are constantly evolving and changing. It's just that the changes are typically more gradual and subtle, not the sudden and dramatic change marked by the Norman invasion of England. In fact, linguists employ a general rule to mark the natural evolution that most languages experience. That general rule is that most languages evolve over the course of 1,000 years to the point that a speaker at the beginning of that period would not be able to communicate with a speaker at the end of that period because of the natural language change. And this general rule certainly applies to English. As I mentioned before, there are earlier periods of English known as Old English or Anglo-Saxon, and an intermediate period known as Middle English. There's also a third period, which represents the version of English which we speak today, called Modern English. So those are the three periods to keep in mind. If I went out and conducted a poll, and I told most people that there are three periods of English, Old English, Middle English, and Modern English, and I asked them to tell me which period Shakespeare belonged to, I suspect that the overwhelming majority would answer either Old English or Middle English. In fact, I wouldn't be completely surprised if no one gave the correct answer, which is Modern English. Shakespeare is considered a modern English writer because we can read his words today without the need for a translation. Now, I know some of you will say, hold it a minute, I need a translator to read Shakespeare. But there's a difference between not understanding Shakespeare's references or the particular way in which he uses words for literary effect and not understanding the language itself. There are certainly translations of Shakespeare's works into conversational, contemporary English, and those translations can be helpful, but they're not necessary. If you're willing to spend the time and effort, you can read Hamlet or Macbeth today in the same words Shakespeare used and still understand the gist of the story. Another literary work from the same time period is the King James Bible. Once again, there are modern translations of the King James Bible to make it easier to read, but it's not necessary. If you're so inclined, you can read the King James Bible today and understand it without a translation. Now, Shakespeare's works and the King James Bible were written in the late 1500s and early 1600s. So this was near the beginning of the modern English period. And that's part of the reason why there are noticeable differences between the English used in those works and contemporary English. But English has not evolved to an extent that we can no longer understand these 16th and 17th century works. But if we go back in time a little further, from the 1600s to the 1300s, we're now in the period known as Middle English, the period that followed the Norman invasion of England. And the big difference between this period and the modern English period is the way words were pronounced, especially vowels. For some reason, around 1500, English speakers in the British Isles, and primarily in England, and even more specifically in the south of England, in and around London, for example, they began to change the way they pronounced their vowels. This is known as the Great Vowel Shift. And this shift or pronunciation change is one of the events which marks the transition from Middle English to Modern English. So what did Middle English sound like? Well, one of the benefits of a podcast is that I can actually illustrate how these older versions of the language sounded. But first, let me give you a disclaimer. I don't claim to be an expert in the pronunciation of Middle English or Old English. Again, my focus here is on the history, not so much the precise manner in which Old English vowels or consonants were enunciated. However, I hope that my pronunciation will at least give you a general sense of how the earlier versions of the language sounded. So, in order to illustrate the evolution of English, I want to read a passage from one of the most important pieces of literature composed during the period of Middle English, The Canterbury Tales, by Geoffrey Chaucer. And it's very likely you read The Canterbury Tales in school. I know I did. But what you probably read was a modern English translation of the original text written by Chaucer in the 1300s. Now, the book is a collection of tales told by a group of pilgrims on their way to the shrine of Thomas of Becket at Canterbury Cathedral. And the following passage occurs near the beginning of the book, as the author recalls his first impressions upon meeting the pilgrims, in this instance, a knight. And here is the modern English translation, just as you probably read it in school. A knight there was, and he was a worthy man, who, from the time that he first began to ride out, he loved chivalry, truth and honor, freedom and courtesy. He fought bravely in his lord's wars, and in them he had ridden no other man so far, as well in Christendom as in heathen places, and ever honored for his worthiness. Now here's the same passage as it was actually written by Chaucer, and as it would have been read in the 1300s during the period of Middle English. A knight there was, and that a worthy man, that fro the time that he first began to read in ut, a loved chivalry, truth and honor, freedom and courtesy, full worthy was he and his lord as well. And thereto had he readen no man fairer, as well in Christendom as hath Nessa, and ever honored for his worthiness. That was the sound of Middle English. And I think the most important thing to take from that passage is that it's not really that far from modern English, and the words and the grammar are actually familiar. The biggest difference is pronunciation. Again, there was a time when certain words, and especially the vowels, were pronounced differently than today. There are three key components to language: the words that are spoken, which is the vocabulary, the way in which those words are put together, which is the grammar, and the way in which the words are actually pronounced or spoken, the pronunciation. The first two of those, the vocabulary and the grammar, are actually very similar to modern English, but it's the third, the pronunciation, which marks the biggest difference. Let me give you another example. I'm going to use a passage which is often used for the purpose of illustrating the evolution of English. It's the Lord's Prayer. And I'm going to use this passage not for any particular religious purposes, but simply because it's a passage which exists in many different historical languages, including modern, middle, and old English. The modern English version comes from the 1549 Book of Common Prayer, so this is shortly before Shakespeare's writings. And here's the passage, again, in the modern English version. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive them that trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now here's the same passage in Middle English. Ihr Vater, that art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come to, be thy will done in earth as it is done in heaven. Give us today your each day's bread, and forgive to your debtors as we forgive to your debtors. And let us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. So, as you can hear, Middle English is not the English we speak today, but it's close enough that we can recognize it as a form of English. But if we go back in time even further, to the period before Middle English, before the arrival of the Norman French in Britain, we see and hear a language that's barely recognizable as a form of English at all. But it is. It's the earliest version of English, which is known as Old English or Anglo-Saxon. You've probably heard English described as a Germanic language, but you may not know exactly what that means. Does that mean English came from German? No, not exactly. It means that English, like modern German, Dutch, Swedish, and Norwegian, they all evolved from an ancient ancestral language spoken in Northern Europe called Germanic, or Proto-Germanic to be precise. English did not come from German, nor did German come from English. They each came from an even older, shared language. So it should not be surprising that the further back in time we go, the more English looks and sounds like German, because the further back in time we go, the more they have in common. Old English was spoken by the Anglo-Saxons, and the Anglo-Saxons were Germanic-speaking tribes from northern Germany and modern-day Denmark. They were only a small part of the many Germanic tribes that dominated central Europe east of the Rhine. And when the Roman Empire began to collapse in the 4th and 5th centuries, these Germanic tribes poured into Western Europe, into the areas that were previously controlled by the Romans. And this included southern Britain, in the area we know today as England. What began as an invitation became a migration and eventually became an outright invasion. By the 5th century, these Germanic-speaking Anglo-Saxons defeated and displaced much of the native Celtic-speaking Britons, and they established several independent Anglo-Saxon kingdoms, which eventually coalesced in the face of Viking invasions in the 8th century to become a unified nation. These were the same Anglo-Saxons who were defeated by the Norman French in 1066. So what did this early version of Anglo-Saxon English sound like? Well, fortunately, we have many sources from this period to document the language of the Anglo-Saxons. And one of the most well-known is one of the first books which was ever written in English. And you probably read it in English class in school. It's the epic poem Beowulf. And it's a virtual certainty that when you read it in school, you read a modern English translation. Because, as you'll hear, Old English is so far removed from modern English and so much closer to the original Proto-Germanic language that it's completely foreign to modern ears. Remember the general rule that languages evolve over the course of 1,000 years to the point where they can no longer be mutually understood. So let me read the first few lines of Beowulf in modern English. So the Spear-Danes in days gone by, and the kings who ruled them, had courage and greatness. We have heard of those princes' heroic campaigns. Now here's the same sentence, the same opening line from Beowulf, but now in Old English, as would have been spoken by the Anglo-Saxons. What we gardena on yer dogum, thead kininga thrim yefronan, hotha edlingas elin frimadan. As you can hear, there's very little in that which is recognizable to modern English ears. Let's also listen to the Lord's Prayer in Old English and compare it to the Middle English version I read earlier. So again, here's the Lord's Prayer, this time in Old English. Vade ure through the ert on heavenum, si the name ye halagad, to become a tinorice ye rurde tin wila on ertha swaswa on heavenum. Irna ye dawamli chan haf, Sile us to die, and forgive us irgiltas, swasway we forjefath irgiltendam.
Anegilanthus on Kosnog ac Alisas of Ephila Sutlacha.
Again, this is far removed from modern English. It's difficult to discern much in that passage that's familiar as English. As I said earlier, even though modern English differs from Middle English in pronunciation, it shares a great deal of vocabulary and grammar. But when compared to Old English, it shares neither pronunciation nor grammar. And the vocabulary is so far removed from modern English that we only see glimpses of words that will eventually become recognizable to us. So, for example, in the passage I just read, the Lord's Prayer in Old English, the word evil is ephila. The word father is fader. The word hour is ira. The word heaven is hephanum. The word earth is ertha. The word forgive is forgif. So, how did we get from there to here? That's the question I'm going to try to answer over the course of this podcast series. I'm going to take you back to the beginning, to the very beginning, to the ancient language from which English ultimately derived, the oldest known ancestor of English, the Indo-European language. Of course, this is also the oldest known ancestor of almost all of the languages of Europe, as well as many of the languages of Central Asia, including Sanskrit and Persian. Over the next few episodes of the podcast, I'm going to cover the period from the original Indo-European language to the arrival of the Anglo-Saxons in Britain. This is the story of pre-English. And it's very important to the overall story of English because English is a blended or a mutt language. It combines elements of many different languages, but almost all of those major influences share a common Indo-European ancestry. The Germanic languages, Greek, Latin, French, the Celtic languages, they all came from this common source. So to fully understand the history of English, you have to understand this essential period. I'm then going to look at the period from the arrival of the Anglo-Saxons in Britain to their defeat at the hands of the Norman French. And this is the period of Old English. After that, we'll cover the period from the Norman invasion in 1066 to the time just before Shakespeare and the King James Bible. And that's the period of Middle English. And then the last portion of the podcast will cover the period from Shakespeare through the creation of the British Empire to the expansion of English to North America and the Indian subcontinent and Australia and beyond. That's the period of modern English. And collectively, that's the story of English. So in closing this introductory episode, I just want to make note of a quick housekeeping matter. I want to encourage you to check out the website for this podcast, historyofenglishpodcast.com. Each episode is available at the site, and there is a specific page dedicated to each episode with a summary of the episode and maps and illustrations which are mentioned. So that concludes this introductory episode. Next time, we'll look at the oldest known ancestor of English, the Indo-European language. So until then, thanks for listening to the History of English.